Gather around your speakers, hoop heads. It's NBA story time. Jamel Johnson here to spin you tales of NBA shenanigans you didn't know you needed to know. Like that time when a little startup league tried anything to be relevant, or when Ricky Davis earned himself a dumb nickname. I also love you, Ricky Davis. Catch a new tale on NBA Storytime every week, then listen to the postgame where I break it down with comedians, ballers, and what have you. Find NBA Storytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hey there, Hawk fans. Wanted to jump in quickly. You may have seen over the weekend or recently the Dace Richardson GoFundMe. He is a Hawkeye brother of the Hawkeye Football Brotherhood, played from 2005 to 2009, and he is currently going through a battle against some surgeries from complications with colorectal cancer. And Pat Anger, one of our good friends, set up a GoFundMe. Hawkeye Nation responded with incredible numbers, and at the time of this recording, we are just shy of $80,000 donated to help Dace with his surgeries. We want to use our podcast for good, and we want to help out Dace. We know that a lot of you out there are big fans of the Hawkeye football team, and Dace was a huge part of that back from 2005 to 2009. We want to let you guys know that right now, any donations, first off, go to the GoFundMe page. Just search Dace Richardson GoFundMe. It will come up and make a donation. If you want to support through the Wash Up Walk-Ons, we're letting you know right now that any donations made through our Patreon subscriptions over the next couple months, so any level $4, $8, or $12 on the Patreon page, half of that proceed is going to go to the Dace Richardson GoFundMe, and 50% of the profits from our Hawks by a Million t-shirts that we sell off of our Washed Up Walk-Ons website, those profits are also going to go to the GoFundMe. So if you guys have it in you and you haven't already to donate to Dace Richardson, either do it through the GoFundMe, or you can also support both the podcast and Dace through subscribing on our Patreon or buying a Hawks by a Million t-shirt. Again, those proceeds are going to go to Dace Richardson. All right. I'm going to leave those links in the description of this podcast, both on the YouTube or the audio version, wherever you're listening. And if you have any questions about that, DM me, Tyler Kluver, and I will get you pointed in the right direction. So thank you guys so much for helping. Hawkeye community is amazing. You've already showed out way more than expected, and I know you will continue to do so. All right, let's get into this episode. All the way from North Carolina to Iowa City, Iowa, this guy crushed the hearts of Michigan fans, blew kisses at Nebraska, and did a whole lot in between. You know who it is. Number 3, Keith Duncan, the legend. He's finally on the podcast. We go for a long time. We hope you enjoy. Sit back, relax, and have a day. Let's go.
Welcome back, Watch the Walk-Ons fans, episode 183 of the podcast. And today we're bringing you the episode that we've been talking about for far too long. We got a guy on here that I consider one of my little brothers of the Iowa football team, a guy that I took quite the liking to from the very beginning, far before he actually did something so legendary that he created a memory in my mind that will never leave no matter how long I live on this earth. I got to thank him for one of the best nights of my entire existence and one of the most legendary wins in Iowa football history, Keith fucking Duncan. Welcome to the podcast.
What's up, fellas? I'm excited for it.
You doing right now, Keith?
I'm in Cali right now, kicking with some dudes out here. The weather's actually like, kind of bad. It's raining, so sitting in the hotel room. I got a free day, so tried to hop on here.
We decided to just rip it.
Yeah, right.
I want to because when most people think of you, it tends to shift to the Michigan game. So I want to start with that, and I want to just to stroke my own ego a little bit because I was a part of it, but I also to just bring it in and start hot. I want to set the scene a little bit. All right. So with about 5 minutes left in the game, Michigan finds themselves with the ball. They drive for a few plays, and Manny Rugumba, he comes up with a huge pick on the sideline. All right, I have it. I have the entire end of that game pulled up here. Rugumba picks it off at our own 25. There's 3 minutes and 43 seconds left in the game. At this point, I'm sure you and I were like, shit, let's go. Like, you know, it's 13-11. It has been for like an hour at this point. This is somewhere around like 10 o'clock at night because we're playing in a 7 p.m. game. The air's just a little bit frosty. It's that nice, cool air. Perfect night for football. And I'm looking at you and Miguel because Miguel had missed a kick earlier in the game. This is our 10th game of the season of your freshman year. We're trying to figure it out. Miguel's kind of taking the longer kicks. You had a great camp. Well, Miguel kind of shit the bed during that camp, let's be honest. And so we're kind of using the two kicker system. We run a few plays and Beathard launches a ball. It goes up in the air and they come down with it. And we kind of look at each other like, fuck, man. Like, I remember it. I looked at you.
And this was the exact moment where I looked where the ball was at, looked at CJ, and was hoping that there was a sniper somewhere on a building that was going to take me out at that very moment.
They pick it off, right? Our offense was struggling that entire game. We didn't do a lot. Akram was about the only bright spot that day. CJ's pass is intercepted on their own 16, so they are deep, but there's only a minute 54 left in the game. And I remember thinking, or maybe looking at Miguel at the time and being like, hey, keep your head in it, because we still might get a chance. Like, there's a chance here. They run a few plays. We force them to punt. Desmond receives the punt. And on his way up the field, someone snipes his face mask a little bit. And all of a sudden, we're already at the 50-yard line. All right. We actually start
that call. I don't know. If you go back to watch the clip, I'm like right at the ref's face. And then he threw the flag. Like, goddamn right it
was. You think that was because of you, Kev?
I think so. I think he was a little threatened by me.
Yeah.
Kevin definitely bought the call, dude. Tape don't lie.
Yeah. So, in fact, it actually says that 26 penalty. Yeah, so it says that after that penalty, we got the ball on the Michigan 36-yard line. Is that right?
Yeah, we were almost in field goal range. Yeah. As soon as we got the ball back, we were almost in field goal range because CJ had quarterback draw, and by that point, it was a chip shot.
It was
Desmond had brought it back to about the 50.
At the 50, yep. So first play, C.J. Beathard pass complete to Akram Wadley, 10 yards to the Michigan 26. Akram Wadley run for 3 yards to the Michigan 23. At this point, Keith, we're in range, baby.
Yeah.
The field goal's happening. And I looked at both you and Miguel, and I was like, boys, it's fucking happening. All right, it's go time. We're about to win the game. We're the heroes or the villains here. I think I said that to Miguel because he's big into video games.
Yeah.
And you know, Michigan actually takes a timeout. CJ takes that 8 yard run up to the 15-yard line. At this point, it's like, oh God, there's almost no excuse now. Like, we either have to just win the game or everyone hates us.
I'm transferring.
You're done.
Oh God, yeah. Oh Jesus Christ, Keith. This would have been your life would have been so much different if that kick would have posted.
If I would have missed, I remember like walking into the kick and I'm like, I can always transfer. So it's okay.
So to set
perfect instance, Kluber, we've said it before. Keith, you can't ice Keith? Why? Why can't you ice Keith?
Because Keith doesn't give a fuck, dude.
And this is a clear representation of Keith not giving a fuck. He's walking out to the kick like, well, if I go, if it goes in, I'm a legend. If it doesn't, I'll be at a different school.
There's
a
win-win. And I don't have to pay $40,000 a year.
Yeah. Well, and we'll get to that. KF runs the clock down to 3 seconds. At this point, we've already gotten our practice rep. I probably tried to say something to you. I don't know what's going through your head, but we run out onto the field. It's 10 p.m. in Iowa City. We're in the middle of Kinnick Stadium, and we have a chance to absolutely go down in history of Iowa football. What's running through your head?
So,
other than I can transfer.
Yeah. I think Jaleel tried coming up and saying something to me, and either you or Ron was boxing him out. Don't talk to him. Don't talk to him. And I'm like, oh my God, where am I? and yeah. So as we're running on the field, again, I'm a true freshman at a Big Ten school. I'm from the East Coast. I really have no idea what college football is. And I don't think I realized that until I became a senior, junior. So again, I had no idea what to expect. I just kind of kept my head down and was very calm. And for some reason, I was more calm than what I thought that I was going to be, in that situation. Again, you said, it's obviously I have high expectations for myself, but going into something like that, it's not really a loss here. So I think that as bad as that sounds, I think it actually helps a little bit. Called the timeout and had some more time on the field. And I think that's what helps. I know a lot of people say icing kickers is awesome. For me personally, I love it. Cause you get as specialists, you only get, let's say maybe 40 seconds to a minute on the field, mm-hmm. On the field doing something during the game. So having a minute or whatever, 30 second TV timeout, that's huge just to be in that atmosphere and get used to it.
I agree.
Yeah. It's awesome. And that happened with Nebraska again last year. Got a practice kick and then got some more. So that was awesome. Yeah. But,
and then re-cemented yourself a legend.
Yeah. I hate those guys, but
you are advising the kicker. I never thought it was really a good strategy. I don't know. I think someone did a study on it one time and said it really doesn't make any difference whatsoever.
Well, yeah, we may have to edit this one out, but there's actually a thing that a call that we have coming, or that I thought about. It's let's say we have a timeout and we get into last second field goal range, the clock stopped, whatever it may be, for Nebraska, Nate spikes it. We have 6 seconds left or whatever it may be. We have a timeout. Right when I'm back in my stance, we call a timeout so I can get a practice kick. So something
I agree.
So you guys are taught as soon as you hear a whistle snap, just go and snap it.
It's not even – the coaches encourage it, but they don't even teach – it's not taught, right? As specialists, we kind of just know. I echo everything Keith just said. I think I've talked about it on here before. Keith's right. For a kicker and a punter, they're split – and for the snapper, if he does both, you get you literally cross that white line and it's ooh, it's you step through this portal of everything just heightens a little bit, right? And you get better at drumming that down over your career. It feels less and less adrenaline based and more at that point you have the reps. Mm-hmm. But at some point you're man, just being out here for a little longer, it was almost, I don't know, Keith, you can talk about it, but when people called timeout on our field goals, because they did it before too, on less big kicks, but just random kicks, hey, let's see if we can ice them before half or whatever. I always felt when they called that timeout, because you kind of expect it to come as well, it's this free bonus time on the field. Mm-hmm. During when the clock and the game is actually mattering, it's oh, fuck yeah, I get to be out here a little longer. This feels good. Almost to when we're in period, in special teams period, and they make us kick it again, because KF just likes to see it go through the post.
More in the middle.
Right. And the reason we kick it again is because you're more likely to, once you miss a kick from a certain spot, you're more likely to probably put it through on the next one because you know exactly what you did wrong. You're playing the exact same wind, 10 seconds later. Like, that's why I always, you know, but you can talk about that. I agree. The out, when they blow that whistle and you get that little 30 seconds to hang out on the field, for me, a lot of the guys had been there the year before. I remember guys like Keegan and Sam Brinks and a few of the others had been on the unit for the Marshall kick against Pitt. And so we had been almost in that exact same situation, just facing the other way. And I looked around to those guys, not that they needed it. And I was like, hey, we've been here before. Everybody do your job. Let's go win this thing. I don't think anyone said anything. You kind of just stepped back, took a few practice swings. Ron might have said something to you, which, Ron, what a guy. You know, quite honestly, maybe he's the best guy to have in that situation because you can just kind of laugh at him and be like, Ron.
He's so like you guys don't really know them. Like Sleep Dalton and Tori, oh my gosh, they're like Ron. It's so hard to describe them. They're just so like loose. It's actually like unreal. It's like they don't comprehend what American football is yet and how serious it is.
Right.
So they go into it a little bit more loose.
And it helps.
Yeah, like Tori's first punt of the year. He's like, mate, I just hope I don't get a backed up punt like out of the end zone. And of course he gets one out of Purdue. And he booms it and he's like, yeah, he's just, it's so funny to like sit on the sidelines with him, especially when there's no fans. Like this, our first year, like when we were playing Purdue, Coach Parker was not happy with one of the calls and he had some choice words with the ref and Tori's like, how are they able to speak to the referees like that?
It's so funny. Yeah, because he had no clue. Like in his interviews, he would talk about how he's like, I'm literally learning every week. Like, I think you're right. It'd be like placing us over in like a cricket game, and like for some reason, like we're just naturally way good at cricket, so we're in like these big time moments, but we don't understand at all the severity of cricket in this foreign country. So we're just out there like playing, like fuck, I don't care if I do bad or not, but I'm doing good, and so.
Yeah, Tori's like a really good competitor too. But it's funny, like Wisconsin, the one where he dropped and just booted it off the ground, still went like 50 yards.
Yeah.
Like he was obviously upset with himself. And we see, like, we're sitting over there, like, I was just talking to him, like, yeah, you're fine. You'll get another one most likely, blah, blah, blah. You see KF like trudging over to us, like, the first time, like, all year, like, Tori has never done anything wrong. And I'm like, oh my God. So I like walk away. And then I hear like KF in the back, he goes, huh. It's like one of the first times I've seen that, and you've taught me something. So thanks, Tori. And I'm like a 6-point game, and that was the way that KF spoke to Tori. So I think that kind of shows like the respect and like how happy KF was with Tori's performance.
Yeah, I think everybody was pretty goddamn happy with Tori.
That was not the way KF came over and spoke to me during games. If KF and I had an interaction, it's never that pleasant.
Yeah.
For some reason, I guess Harbaugh thinks 10 is better than 11, and they have 10 guys on the field. After you go back and look at the tape, but a guy comes through on the left side, and you say, I've always heard you say that you saw it and you pushed it a little bit, right? You didn't fucking push it right.
No, what happens is like Ron said something to me. He goes, hey, there's a lot of guys on the left. So, okay. And then like, I don't know if you agree, but on the field, once I kicked it, I knew it was in.
Yeah.
And then replay from behind. I'm like, oh, that was kind of close.
When you hit it, I said it was out.
100%.
On the field, I was like right down the middle. Like,
well,
it looks so much more like in the,
yeah.
It's hard to explain.
But you can attest to this, Keith, when you like, even for you, if you watched like, it's this weird special teams thing where all you do all day is you snap, you have this feel for the op. It's this like sixth sense feel. And so when I heard a ball come off Kane's foot or your foot or Miguel's foot, I knew by the sound of it, if he hit it right.
Yeah.
And you know, obviously you're feeling it, but you can also hear all the specialists develop that sixth sense of like, oh, I know if he hit that right. You don't have to pay too much attention. I know how his body, how his leg swings, how he finishes. It's this weird sixth sense. And when I heard it, a little off center, but it was like, I still felt good about it. And we were at short distance, right? So when you're within 35, 30 yards, if it's a 20 yarder, there's not a lot of room for error. Even if you hit it bad, like you can kind of punch it through, like, instead of like really just like being pure and letting the wind take it or the air take it through. And I felt good. Once you kind of saw that it went in, what's the reaction like? What's the feeling?
I had no idea what to do. So I just like ran. I remember seeing Marshall's, and even Miguel, like the next year or 2 years for Nebraska, just running around. I was like, I might as well fall down. Like, what's the harm?
Bad decision,
bad choice.
Yeah, terrible. And I remember like on the bottom of the pile, Kluve, I don't know if you're on the bottom. I know me and Ron were screaming like, get off. And then I went black. And then I woke up and it was clear and everyone was on the field. And then like watching all that, like the replay of it the next day, I see like Devontae Young, like on his knees, just like,
I'm like, literally on the top of the pile. Yeah.
Yeah. I was dead on the bottom of that pile and you were on top, but it was a lot of fun.
The bottom of the piles are scary. I was on the bottom of Marshall's pile, and actually Marshall wasn't even the pile. He escaped the pile, but I was on the bottom of that with like Jaleel, a couple of cheerleaders. It's terrifying. You can like hardly breathe down there. Yeah. You got like 15 on top of it.
Yeah. But the best part about the Michigan kick was talking to Sam Ponder after the kick. That was by far and away the best part.
And what's great about that is usually, I mean, you're a true freshman, KF and the staff, they usually don't let like true freshmen do interviews. Yeah. And I think Ponder and the ESPN crew grabbed you before anyone could really like stop them from it. And you just kind of like did the interview, didn't you?
Yeah. I was walking off and Steve Rowe, who does RSIDs. Awesome.
Did he give the go ahead?
He said, he's like, yeah, you can do national, but you can't do local or Big Ten, which I didn't get, but I'm, you know.
Makes sense, right?
Yeah. So as long, if I mess up saying something, at least it's on national.
Hey, yeah. Hey, yeah. If we tell them we put them in body bags, let's do it to the national media, not these local guys.
Yeah. And yeah, I was going to say, like, now going into media, I tell Steve, like, I'm sorry, because I'm probably going to say something that you guys won't like. So, and then, yeah, KF. What did I say? It was after the Nebraska game. I said something about mustaches and stuff. And I like missed a field goal in period next week. He goes, like, look at you, Dunk. Like, first I got to put out your fires on in media, and now you're missing kicks on me.
I love it. Dude, KF doesn't forget, man. KF does not forget.
Edgy, and I love it. Yeah.
So you make that kick, you wake up, which is great because it would have been real tough for a guy to make a game winning kick and then have like a heart attack or an aneurysm at the bottom of a dog pile and die seconds after he became a legend.
That would have buried you right there in Kinnick.
Yeah. We could have just dug up a hole right there, put the coffin in, spray painted number 3 on it.
Yeah.
You wake up, all of Iowa City is on the field and you go through that madness. We get back into the locker room. It's nuts. Number 2 team in the country. They're 9-0 at the time. Oh, I thought it said number 2 when I looked at the thing that's there. Top 5 team in the country.
AP2, college football playoff 3, or whatever
right. It was. And we just knocked them off. Like, they're probably done, and they ended up being done because of it. What's the first thoughts? Does Drake come over to you and say, hey, you're not going to sleep tonight, or – What happens from that point when you go to shower and walk out of Kinnick Stadium?
Yeah. Again, like, I don't think people, like, you know, you guys know how it is when you're walking to your mopeds or cars or whatever, you walk through the tailgates. And I like walked completely through, like, no one knew who I was.
No one knows.
Yeah. Helmets. I'm a true freshman. I'm a kicker. So like, come on. Yeah.
That's so insane, dude. Just think about that. Everyone right there is going berserk. It's the best night in Iowa City in how long? And the guy who made it happen walks right by you and you're like, who the fuck is that guy? Like,
okay, I got more to this story. And yeah, so we get back. I was like, yeah, I might as well go out, whatever. And we try getting into to scum it. And I was with like some of my friends and they
and get it's in. The precedent of this is like, it's already 11 o'clock at this point.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
It was a late game. So just getting out to the, like, by the time anyone could even get to the bars, it was like 11:30.
Yeah. And then, yeah. So I'm like, they get in and I like couldn't get in. They wouldn't let me in. And the person that I was with, they're like, yeah, like he's a kicker. Like they just kicked it. Like let him in, blah, blah, blah. And the bouncer's like, no, he's not. I don't believe you. No, he's not. I'm like, it's okay. Like, I don't want to get in trouble. Keep in mind, I'm a freshman. KF probably still is like kind of on this kid. So I like walk away and then I see Josie, run into Josie. And he's like, what are you doing? I was like, well, I tried getting in the summit. They wouldn't let me in. So I'm just going to go home. And he goes, no. And he walks right up to, I still remember like what the dude looks like, tall with like red hair. And he's like, hey, he's coming in with me. And he goes, all right. And
Joe's, let's go.
Yeah. That's not a move that you typically expect out of Josie either.
No, I like vividly remember that.
And that's then hilarious.
Thanks, Drake.
Some Drake,
and you then what?
Yeah. No, I was saying I don't remember the rest. Thanks to you.
Do you remember? This might be one of my most favorite moments in our playing days. Is that probably around 12:40 that night? So we had a 1 a.m. curfew.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone looks down at their phones to a text from KF. It's like, curfew's been extended 1 hour, and everyone just goes nuts.
Yeah.
Might have been one of my favorite moments playing.
And, I think he expected that. And it's funny, the next day, or on Monday in practice, we have field goal period. Mm-hmm. And back then, we always used to start out with an extra point. Now we don't do like 45 left hash. I was like, oh, sweet, way to start out the day. And KF goes, well, let's see if you're still celebrating.
Yep.
I shank it and miss it.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, my God. Like, I'm going to lose a job, blah, blah, blah. We're walking back, and he goes, Doc, like, what'd you do last night? And I was like, oh, nothing. And Miguel goes, Drake took him downtown. And he goes, and he goes, oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Miguel. Dude, yeah,
Miguel.
He has
Miguel meant no harm by it. He meant no. So it was just funny.
He has no social awareness, dude. He's like, he's the smartest guy in the book or on the computer or on a test. But the head coach asks what you did last night. And he just thinks to go, oh, yeah, Drake took him downtown.
And then I was there, like, my heart was racing because, again, I'm a true freshman. Like, I don't know. I don't know anything. Like, I'm kind of reserved at that point a little bit. And, like,
I can't believe Miguel dry snitched on you that bad.
And you.
And me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, honestly, KF probably didn't really care. It was just, like, funny. Like, now looking back on it, I'm like, oh, God.
I remember when Marshall had hit the kick the year previous when, you know, on a night like that, so in the training room / locker room, we had this big old hot tub, and guys love to warm up in the hot tub or just go sit there when you got free time. Specialists spend a shitload of time in there, I'll be honest, while everybody else is in meetings. Now you guys had meetings the last couple of years, so that was tough. And the night after the Pitt game, I walk in, Marshall's in the hot tub sweating out the alcohol. And I can smell it on – I can smell Marshall sweating out the liquor. And I'm like, dude, how is your night? He proceeds to tell me no details will come out about that because
that night was so filthy.
Filthy, dude. It got filthy on the third football weekend of 2015. And I'm not exposing Marshall for any of that. But I heard some stories from multiple guys, and that will live within the Iowa Brotherhood forever. But he does. He has his phone up. And he's got 1,500 follow requests on Instagram. And he's just going through like, accept, accept, accept. We get into, we always start with the team meeting, right? Where we go over film. Coach Barker talks, Coach Brian talks, Coach Ferentz talks about the general good stuff, or I guess Wallace. And before we start the meeting, everyone's kind of filing in. Brian walks by, leans over and goes, Marshall, you smell like booze. And like with a straight face and like trying to, and Marshall's like, I don't know what you're talking about, coach. And he goes, I hope you had a fun night. And he just laughed it off. And it's just like, you get one night of absolutely legendary status where you may have been able to actually murder somebody and the cops would have charged the victim. And I'm so happy that you did. And it's great. Speaking of you talking to media, you obviously grew up and came out of your show. Not came out. You didn't come out. Maybe you're gay. I don't know. It is 2021. And that's great. But you came out of your shell media-wise, talked a little bit more, all the way to the Nebraska game in of last year, 2 years ago at this point. You blow them a kiss. You pissed off the entire state of Nebraska with the most simple gesture. And
it's honestly a nice gesture. Like, every time I've ever blown my mother a kiss or, you know, my aunt, they always took it in a very gentle manner. Like, they appreciated the gesture. I really don't know what were up these people's ass.
I want to know if KF or anybody on the staff ever came to you and was like, hey, something you said, or maybe the kiss, they're like, hey, maybe dial it back a little bit.
So they did say something to me, but it wasn't like dial it back. Yeah, I guess I'll say it. So KF, it wasn't about the kiss at all. He just like came up, he goes, balls of steel, dunk, like balls of steel, like just that little stuff from KF. And you know too, Kluv, like in a regular field goal, like you make it, you run off, shake his hand, sweet. I remember that Nebraska one and Penn State last year with the yellow jerseys. I made like a 47 yarder to put us up 3-0. And he like came up and like the little extra thing, he goes, that was a really big kick. Like, that means a lot.
To a specialist, it does. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, it just like a little, it's a little bit different, but yeah, he said that. And then, one of the coaches, one of the Nebraska coaches asked one of our coaches to address it to me. And he called me and he goes, yeah, this is me addressing it. So
I really wish he would have just flat out told the Nebraska coach to eat his nuts right there.
Me too.
Just be like, hey, chipo mi huevos, puta, and just walked off the field.
I think the Nebraska coach got fired anyway, so it's whatever. But yeah, no, I didn't mean like any disrespect.
It was just competitive back and forth
game. And like how it started too was not like, oh, it's just Nebraska. Like they were like during, like in pregame, like that's what pissed me off, I guess. So it's like an unwritten rule. Like if a specialist is here, like you guys go here,
yeah,
you just switch back and forth. Everyone has space. One, they dress like seven kickers, which is like a, like, don't do it.
And they still can't find a good one.
Actually, yeah, their kicker this year was pretty good.
He was good this year, but before this year, it was like they were trying soccer players and like shit like that.
No, and if you dress seven guys, like don't have them warm up. Like at max four. Like
three, dude.
Three's awesome, but at max four. And they were just like taking up the whole field space, and their head strength coach was not moving. I was like, sir, do you mind moving? And he just looked back like, that. And like doesn't even acknowledge me. So it's like, sweet, Jim, snap it. And right when he snaps it, he like ducks out of the way. He goes up to Sleep Dalton, and Sleep has a mouth too, which is awesome. Stands right in front of Sleep, and Sleep didn't give him any warning, so he just kicked it. And the same dude this year comes up. So yeah, like what we do, you know, we huddle when we're going out to pregame. The specialists are always out first, so we huddle and then we run to the other side because we always warm up there. When it's outside of 60 minutes to the game, you can warm up anywhere on the field. It's no rules.
And the specialists usually go the far side first because then you can get all that wind work done down there so that when the rest of the team comes out, then you're working on your own side of the field.
Yeah. Yeah. So this year they were down there and we go warm up and instantly like their coach comes up. He goes, you shouldn't be down here. You're going to get hurt. And you know that. I was like, honestly, like it's fine, whatever. So I keep kicking. I don't care. And if you know Coach Woods, like Coach Woods wasn't out there at that time, but if he was, that's his like number. He does not like that. And he's a very competitive dude.
Coach Woods, he ride or dies for his guys, bro.
He's a man. So yeah, if he was out there, that's like his blood pressure would have been through the roof. So I'm like, he tells me to scoot back a little bit. I'm like, yeah, that's fine. I scoot back. I was being respectful. And then one of their players that wasn't dressing, he like got injured the week before, comes up and is like talking, like literally like I could touch him just going like this. He's in my ear And like, that's fine. Again, I could care less. Like, he means nothing to me. And I start kicking, and their strength coach again stands right next to him. It's doing the same thing. And then one time, like I'm back in my stance and he kicks my ball over. And like that, like I don't like, and I said something to him. And then Scott Frost comes over. He goes, just leave him, like, leave him, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Like, let it go. So like that's happening.
This is all this year.
This year, yeah.
Yeah, after you blew him the kiss last year.
Yeah, which that's fine. I don't care if you like act that way. It's fair. And then again, if they hit a game winner, like, celebrate. That's how football is. Like, geez, it's the same thing about like baseball. If you like guys
bad
like
flips.
Home runs, yeah, bat flips, whatever. Like, you just got a 400-foot home run hit off you. Do whatever you want. But yeah, like that kept going on for a little bit. We stay down there, we don't move. And they're just in our ear. And so we finally go to the other side just because the time was up, not because they told us to. And yeah, warmups go. And keep in mind the stadium, there's no fans. So you can hear everything. So I had 5 field goals that came, and every single kick I went out there, like, their linebacker was like saying my name and some other personal stuff. And guys from the bench were saying some stuff. Like, I swear even their coaches were just like going in at it. And I loved it. Like, that's awesome. Like, that's what football is. It's, and that's what college football is too. Cause people have, that's like my thing. Like, college football is awesome. College sports are awesome. Cause people have so much, like, connectivity to the university, whether you went there or you grew up there, like, there's so much passion and tradition. And I don't know if you see that in professional sports. So yeah, that stuff was awesome. And again, like, it wasn't meant to be disrespectful, whatever I did or they did. It's just, that's the nature of the game. That's college sports.
It's incredible.
I love the competition. Yeah. Keith, you said, I don't really care about like 50 times during that story. What do you care about? Does anything faze you at all?
Oh, I care about the Hawks winning.
Number one. That's vibe.
Probably what I care. Like, I care to that, but not much is really going to throw me off. Only like, if I do get thrown off, it's because of what I did to myself. And that's kind of like, again, like the strength of my game isn't my leg strength or whatever like that, but it's my,
yeah, no, we know you're a pussy. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Hey, I'm working on it though.
I know. So yeah, but you're right. It was always this weird, I think KF even said it in a few post game, or maybe not post game, but just press conferences. He was like, or no, it was like Woods would always talk about how it's like mentally things just don't really get to you, which is good because Miguel was the other way, right? Like, still a good kicker, had great years, also beat Nebraska on a last second. It was wet that day too.
Yeah.
But Miguel, he's the most in his head of anyone I've ever met. And did you know that he pissed his pants before he kicked that field goal?
See, I don't know if that happened, because I swear he would have told me that.
Dude, he said you saw it on the podcast. He said it on the podcast.
I did see it. Yeah. I mean, that's hilarious if he did.
I mean, it would not surprise me at all. It's funny.
You have to normalize pissing your pants when you're in a football game, because there's no time to, they don't got porta potties, you know.
It actually,
the specialists, they're not sweating or anything, so you're just holding all that water.
Yeah, exactly.
But it does make sense, because Miguel like had like severe like bladder problems.
He had issues, dude.
So it was the Outback Bowl when Caleb second string, and like he'd come up and be like, or it was like weird, like we didn't know who was doing like second field goals or whatever, but Miguel would come over like in big games. And he'd be like, hey, I'm going to the bathroom. If we have a field goal, you're up. I'm like, oh my God.
Keith, then, do you remember? Yeah, I know. He's an idiot. Do you remember when we went to Michigan State and they heckled Miguel the whole time?
Yeah.
And they were in the Colonel Sanders outfits.
Yeah. And that's also I think that was a game where Miguel messed up the fake.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No. No, they threw it to Epines.
I don't know. Again, love Miguel. Love Miguel so much. he was supposed to run like an out route, and I think he got like put into the bench or something like that. Oh, I'm thinking about Penn State. No, he did get put into the bench in Michigan State. But yeah, like the fans, they're like Russinos, like pitch it back to Duncan and then throw it to Kluver, like the kicker flea flicker. And yeah, it was just hilarious. And
there are two guys. You can go back and probably find it on the TV because they got shown the whole time. There's like two or three guys in Colonel Sanders outfits that sat right behind the specialist that Michigan State game heckled Miguel the entire game, and it was the best thing I've ever sat through.
I love it. I honestly love it so much.
He had a field goal that game either.
Yeah, I don't. We sucked ass that game as a team. You mentioned that one thing you do care about is the Hawks winning. Quickly, because it's been, you've told the story, plenty of people have written about it, especially after you had the year that you had last year and that kick in your freshman year. Quickly, how did Keith Duncan become a Hawkeye? Like, how did this even happen?
Yeah, I think it all starts with Jason Baker, actually.
Who we're going to have on the podcast.
He's awesome. Yeah, he's great. An all-time Hawk. Yeah, but I'm a kid in North Carolina who doesn't really have any. I was going to go to Furman, which is a small school in South Carolina, 3,000 people. I had a half scholarship, I was still going to have to pay $35,000, really expensive private school. But yeah, that's where I was going to go. And we ended up playing Charlotte Christian. Fun fact, that's where Steph Curry went to school. But we played them, and their athletic director was John Casey, who was a kicker with Jason Baker at the Panthers. Again, great kicker, and they were close friends, and I had a good game. So he mentioned to Baker, he's like, hey, you may want to check this dude out. And I didn't know that at the time. I just get a DM from Coach Wallace before the Rose Bowl.
Wallace slid in your DMs?
He did. And yeah. He always says, he goes, I'm taking the credit for your recruiting. I'm like, yeah, that's fair. Even though when I came on my visit, like Wallace was like, yeah, come on your visit, like whatever. So me and my dad drive up through Kentucky. You have to stay the night.
It's a long drive, dude. North Carolina, that's a long-ass drive.
Like 16 hours. We do it, like, twice. But there was, like, a snowstorm, so we were driving through the snowstorm, and we get there, and it's just, like, classic Iowa, just, like, kind of gray, ice in the ground, snow in the ground. But I, like, love it. And we pull up to the facility, and it's Scott Southmaid and Liz Tovar sitting in the front. And, yeah, I was, like,
they brought out the A unit, baby.
Let's go. And then, yeah, KF comes out, and he probably has no idea who I am. Like, no idea. I think Scott literally went back. He goes, hey, we have someone to see. Like, you need to see this kid real quick. Just leave. So it was like maybe a 2-minute conversation. And then Marty McFly walks
yes,
me.
Yes, sir.
Let's go. He walks me around the facility, and I run into Brian, and Brian, like, we had a great conversation. He's awesome. And like, that was one, like, he's like, yeah, I just want to let you know, like, when you get here, I'm either really going to like you or I'm not going to like you at all. So
he's right.
Seems about par for the course for Brian.
Kevin, Mike.
Yeah. I'm like, that's so fair. And at least you're like upfront about it too.
And that's the honest God to God truth. Because there's really no in between with Brian. You either do what is expected of you and you're a good teammate and somebody that they want in the program and Brian likes you a lot, or you fuck up and things go rocky because you can't do shit right and he absolutely trashes you.
And I respect it so much too, because that's how like the program's built. Yep. But yeah, like after that little run through, Marty takes me on a 5-minute tour around Iowa City. He's like, you may want to check these places out when you get here, these places. And then I drive home. And yeah, Marty sold Iowa to me.
Wow. That's incredible.
What places exactly was he showing you now?
right next to Iowa Book.
Okay, I gotcha.
that one, huh? So you arrive in Iowa City. Did you kick with us in the fall or in the summer of 20? Yeah.
I went through a couple skills and drills because Caleb wasn't there at the time.
No.
And yeah, I went through some skills and drills, and then we went to camp, and it was five of us.
Man.
Tell me
about freshman year camp and the experience of Colton, Miguel, me, Jimmy. Yeah.
Well, again, like we have, that was the most specialist we've ever had in a group. And again, at this time, I think it's normal because it's the only thing that I've like been used to. Yeah, there's five kickers, which is like a lot. And we are running like two groups on, wait, I have to mention the Coach White thing first.
Oh, go for it.
Okay. So
that, we love him on this show.
Oh, great. He's actually a coach in Michigan. So I was like really hoping that we played Michigan. But yeah, I'm sitting in Wallace's office, like talking to him, and Coach White, the special teams coordinator at the time, just like peeps his head in. He goes, so is this a done deal? And I'm like, I don't know who you are. And that was the end. And I know for a fact he doesn't know my name because he called. yeah. We'd be all out there. He'd be like, Kluver, can you tell him to do this?
And which is wild because he knew my name because that's who he blamed everything on for his tenure. Dude, after the Marshall, after that Marshall pit kick, I found him, or we crossed each other. You know, everybody's on the field at that one. He goes, such a shitty snap, Kluver, but we won. I was like, what? Come on.
You're shitting me.
No, yeah. That's the first thing he said to me.
Jesus Christ.
I was like, all right.
Great guy. But yeah, wait, sorry. I totally.
No, so we were back. So we were basically in camp. You've got Ron, me, the whole squad. Like, what's your initial reaction? What are your thoughts as a 18-year-old kid walking? Like, what does that feel like? And then also you get thrust into playing freshman year. And obviously one of the biggest kicks in Iowa history. Then talk about, and you can start back through that whole freshman year, but then talk about the journey of Miguel deciding that he wasn't going to go down without a fight and having to just like go on the back burner until last year, 2019, and then this year, 2020.
Yeah, this actually brings me to a topic which I love talking about. I think, Clue, we've talked about it before. It's like freshmen coming in and thinking that they, not entitled, but they think that they should be playing automatically. Mm-hmm. And I think that comes down to like our society just wanting things instantly. And again, I think in a bigger picture, that's probably social media. Now you can get your news, anything you want, just by going on Twitter or whatever. And people get used to that and want things so, you know, instantly. And now with recruits just getting basically whatever they want, they in high school, they get graphics and all that stuff.
At Tennessee, they get McDonald's bags full of money.
Yeah, right. Like, at least make it Wendy's. McDonald's is terrible. But yeah, it's.
Dude, I would have been. I thought about that. The first thing I saw when I saw that story was like, damn, I would have been kind of salty if I was expecting a double quarter pounder and all I would have got was like a rack, dude.
100K. Yeah.
Like, coach, I love the green, but like, I was kind of hungry.
Yeah, right. SEC football. That's how they eat there. But yeah, no, it's just crazy how freshmen come in and think that they should like be playing or they should be second string, and they don't understand the value of scout team because they've never had to play it. And I think that's the mentality that I had coming in. Again, I was just like a sponge. I was just trying to take everything in. There's five kickers at the time, and how we do field goal unit is there's like one group, the ones and twos or ones basically go together. And then the twos, and the ones and twos was Miguel and Mick, and it was basically Miguel's job to lose.
Mick was still there your freshman year.
He was.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And yeah.
What a fucking guy.
And then it was me, Josh Prohl, Savage, and Caleb.
Prohl. Oh my God, dude. We had so many kickers.
Yeah. And Prohl, God, I love that kid.
Yeah, me too.
He was there like, he's like, honestly, like, if you guys need me to shag balls, like, I'm here.
I know, dude. It was nuts, dude. He was like, he was the most, I mean, like, he volunteered to be, like, the group, like, bitch. And I don't understand it to this day, but the guy was the most chill.
Awesome.
And he, dude, he.
He's like a firefighter now.
He's something. A firefighter, and when he was in college, he did his fair share of pulling. But I'm not.
General managers ask questions to find the right players, like, do they have ice in their veins? When you're hiring, you can use Indeed assessments to make sure you find the right candidates with the skills you need. Don't just hope your perfect candidate will find you. Indeed's hiring tools help you cut through the noise to hire faster and smarter. In fact, Indeed Instant Match provides a list of quality candidates whose resumes are on Indeed the moment you post a sponsored job. And with Indeed Assessments, choose from 135 skills tests to help make sure you're finding applications from people with skills you need. Get started right now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through September 30th. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm not going to go into that either.
Yeah, he would like miss a kick and be like, eh. And then just like go in the indoor, put the ball at 60 yards and smoke it halfway up the upper. Like, what? But yeah, like I ended up like kicking. The kicks were going through, but they looked awful. Like they were so ugly. Again, like I was just like, oh, like I have no idea what I'm doing. The number one thing that you can do as a freshman is come in and be right in the weight room. Be right with Doyle at that time and just honestly do whatever you can to get in his good graces and the strength coach's good graces. Cause that's like, again, how you earn respect in this program. But yeah, just like doing the right thing. That's what I was kind of focused on. And I remember the one practice where I think Mick and Miguel were like really struggling at this one spot. It was like re-kick.
Dude, we kicked it like 6 times and they missed all of them.
It was a move the ball period or it was a 2-minute kick, I think. And we moved the ball down. And Miguel like runs out to go kick it, and Kay's like, no, like dunk, come kick this one. And I was like what? Go out and like make it. And me and Brian like always used to like heckle each other too. So yeah, that was fun. I think that like really kind of opened my mind. Like, oh, I can actually like play. Like this is like legit. And then yeah, Miami of Ohio comes around and I'm kicking. So yeah, that was fun. The first year it goes like me and Miguel kind of go back and forth. He takes long kicks because I can't squat more than 200 pounds at the time, and that drastically improved, by the way.
Hope so. Yeah.
I was 30 pounds off from the squat record for specialists.
Yeah, really? Who's got that?
Schultz.
Andy Schultz. It's like what, 450?
500.
It is 500.
Yeah.
You were squatting 470 by your time. You're in.
Yeah.
Look at you.
That's all that I could do.
It's way more, dude. It's way more than me. Way more. Like, dude, when I got chocolate milk fat and I was 243, that was the first time I ever hit 405. I hit it for one and decided, I'm good with doing this one time in my life.
Yeah, but if you throw 225 in the bar for me for bench press, I may suffocate from the bar. So
yeah. Everyone's got their thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, then again, the next year, camp rolls around. I have like a decent year, I would say. I just, again, chip shots. So there wasn't much I could do. But yeah, Miguel ends up beating me out. And again, like I thought that I improved in camp. Like I had a much better camp my second year than I did my first year.
Absolutely.
Miguel hit like 93%.
He went psycho, dude.
Psycho. And at that point, like that's the first time I've never, like I've sat on the bench during the game. Like I've never played during a game.
Mm-hmm.
It was humbling, but it was also like, it was like a maturity phase. So that was great. I could learn from Miguel again. Like Miguel's a great friend. He's so smart. Like you said, but he's also like a really good kicker. So like learning from him, putting myself in like a situation where like not having the stress that I was going to play. So I was able to sit back and learn some things, whether it be like atmosphere, pregame warm up. And I think that's huge. And that's the difference of like high school to college is having that routine, having the maturity to do that, just will help you grow as a player. And I think, yeah, that was huge for me, in my career. And yeah, next year is basically the same thing. And then yeah, junior year, it's me and Caleb competing for a spot. And oh my goodness, I cannot wait for Caleb to kick this year. He is legit.
Yeah. I talk to guys all the time, and a lot of times my brother would be like, yo, Shudak is fucking good. And no,
he is unreal. Like
I was talking to Woods this fall. I was helping coach his son's team and every now and then. And he said like, yeah, we got two All-American kickers in our room. I don't know what to do.
No, like that's legit. Like, how it is, like Caleb is so good,
and part of that is because he had to be because of the it's back and forth, right? It's like that weird competition, but you force each other to raise the bar.
And that's how it is again at Iowa. You come in and the number one thing that you can do again is get right in the weight room. And also I think the best thing that we did in the specialist group was have like a friendly competition. I don't know if like that's the right word, but like we were all competing towards one goal, and that was to help the Hawks win. And there was no like animosity between anyone competing for the jobs or like, oh, he beat me out, I hate this kid. Again, like the goal was to win games. And I think having that mindset and, you know, Woods, again, like Coach Woods kind of reiterating that weekly was huge. Again, like he smokes the ball. He's a smaller dude, but he can smoke it. I'm telling you, like if he has a good year this year, he like will be in the NFL 100%.
I love it.
I don't want to go out here and just say like, oh, he should be like 100% or he should make a 55.
No, he has to go do the work and things have to fall, but he's got the talent.
Again, he's going to be a 6-year senior. Like that's one crazy. Two, like. Again, he has all the tools. He just like needs to execute, and he's again a great, great teammate. He's again helped me a lot. So I can't wait.
6 years, man. I can't imagine spending 6 years in the program.
That offseason, even as a kicker, like oh.
Keith, what did you think about the offseason training and the specialists having to do? So this is a big topic, right? And Coach Doyle started to be a little bit more lenient because I think Baker actually helped him see it. And I think more than anything, they're starting to realize this too. I think coaches are scared to have, I think it's good to some extent for the specialists to compete and do the same stuff as everybody else, because it does earn that sense of respect. But in some instances, there is absolutely no reason that our kickers should be
rallying.
Yeah. Like getting like puking in a trash can. Like there's just no reason, right? Like it's actually detrimental to us going, like you guys going out and getting better. And I'm curious on what your thoughts were about like that dynamic of earning it kind of on the strength conditioning field in the off season and the respect factor. We just talked to Casey on last week, and it's let's be honest, Iowa football, we got a little softer as time gone on, as the world has, but like back in Casey's day, like you had to earn
2013 Iowa football. You weren't here for this, Clove. Kevin, you were. No, you were, Clove. You were, because it was Iowa State week, except it could have been in the summer. You remember Brandon Sheriff's pre-Iowa State speech?
Yeah.
You were there, Clue?
Yeah.
I remember.
The contents of the speech stay secret. But absolutely, just what happened in that whole sequence of events just shows how much different the times are.
Absolutely. But you're right, Drake. So anyway, setting that stage a little bit, the specialist, because – they used to have to be a hardened, trusted by both the team and the staff group of guys, because Coach Woods and him being in the room all the time, that was not a thing. Like we had Kevin Spencer for a year or two in there.
Awesome guy.
Awesome dude. Yeah. He was a boss. Coach Wallace would poke his head in now and again, but now there's a full-time coach, right? It's not like he's holding your hand, but if he has to redirect the group, he does. Whereas like back in the first couple of years of my time and beyond, it was, we got to make sure that these guys are like, there is a guy that is absolutely 100% trusted to not fuck around, make sure everybody in the group is ready to go doing their shit. Because as college guys, like it's easy, especially as specialists, and we did it multiple times, like get bored in practice. You got your reps in, you know, it's a 2.5 hour spring practice or camp practice. Like it's pretty easy to just be like, yo guys, you want to play some specialist golf in the indoor? Like let's play a little specialist golf, or let's like play long toss or something like that. Kevin's sitting there just grinding his teeth because he hates us so much.
I hate you guys so much. And I'm not going to lie, nothing made me happier than the spring ball when Coach Doyle started making you guys run like speed drills during after after special teams.
That was horseshit, by the way. Again, no, absolutely no reason for that other than to just be like, oh, they're not doing enough. They're
playing specialist golf and they're doing black drills out there.
Everyone's running their heads into each other. And we're like, all right, this is a par three. We're going for that trash can in the corner.
Keith, did you have to do tackle circuit?
Yes, I did. Okay.
How much did you enjoy that?
I hate Marcel Jolly. So,
join the club.
Hey, listen, man, it's 2021, dude. We can't be hating those guys anymore. Remember?
I say I hate Marcel. So my freshman year in tackle circuit, again, I have no idea what's going on. They're just like, hey, you 145 pound kid, just like stay right there, run at an angle, and this dude will hit you. And usually, like how it is, it's like guys are like. Like just like kind of hit him and run a little bit.
Yeah.
But I remember like Marcel was tackling me. I had the ball and I look over and he is like he's like smiling. And like I look like fresh meat. Like I'm a tiny kid. Like who wouldn't want to tackle me? And then I like run at an angle and boom, like he hits me as hard as he can. And I'm like like try to get my breath back. And he's like, yeah, that was fun. Like line back up, let's do it again. I was like, eh. So yeah, like Marcel.
Honestly, that's how it is. Keith, you started at like 142 pounds when you came into the program.
Yep.
How much did you actually weigh? Like 165?
No, I was legit like 153.
You were 153?
Yeah. I was tiny.
So did you act? So on the website, it has you at 179. Did you get up higher than that, or what was your actual weight?
Yeah, I'm actually like I'm 186 right now.
Okay.
So yeah, I know, right? So
you actually might be the second biggest guy on this podcast now.
No, dude, I'm 193.
Jeez. Oh, I don't know. Both of you other two assholes on here are getting fucking skinny.
How much did you say you weigh, Keith? I was texting somebody about the Connor Khabib rematch.
Khabib. Like 186.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Stuff. So
I don't know, dude, as I'm cutting to 199, I'm not sure that I have the mental fortitude to give up all the calories that it would take to get down to like 190.
So like, that's the thing. Like I hate gaining weight. It sucks.
Yeah.
Dude, wait till you're trying to cut it where you have to be in a calorie deficit all the time.
Like I feel like I'm totally fine with just eating one meal a day and I can be okay.
Yeah, dude, we get it, dude. You're a rat. You're a rat.
Like it's actually hilarious. So we had that quarantine period where we were just like, we're off for like a month, 2 months or whatever. And we come back and it's weigh-in day, of course, first day. And we're all just like looking around like, oh God. I like surprisingly make weight, but like, you know how like KF gets the card? We all get our sheets. It's like red or green.
Oh yeah.
You like look down the list. It's like a Christmas tree.
It's judgment day, dude.
Yeah. And then you like get to Jacobus's name. Oh, no. It says like plus 28. And I'm like,
yes.
Weird. One guy get pregnant over break.
Yeah. And Dallas. Yeah. He like put like two sweatsuits on and go in the rec sauna for 30 minutes and magically he's down 11 pounds the next day.
Oh my God.
Oh wow.
Like, he would like walk in and be like, yeah, I'm just not gonna make weight today. So
dude, but there's some of those days where you're on the edge, it's like 6-7 pounds under or over, and you're like, dude, I might just not, like, is it worth it? I might just not make it.
What was horrible is like I was on like the weight gain, like I've never missed body weight at the University of Iowa.
Wow, good for you.
Shout out to you. I never missed a conditioning time. Or got a penalty, but shout out to you for never missing weight.
Yeah, no, that was, I'm proud of that, but.
I did both of those, Drake.
You had a penalty?
I think so, like some bullshit, like I moved the ball too soon and I got like a 5-yard false start, but it was the same thing I did every other snap. The guy was just an asshole.
That happens a lot. And they're getting more stingy about that.
Anyway. Dude, referees suck, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you segued great into the quarantine and all of that, because we're already at an hour here, but I want to talk about like, well, first of all, you got absolutely snubbed by the Groza because there's SEC bias and it's a conspiracy. And that's true.
It's actually like ridiculous. It was like pretty ridiculous, like when I was there. And I'm not one to like make excuses or whatever. Like, I hate that. It was just like really blatantly just weird. It was one, like a career thing, and two, I think the name helped out a lot. And like, again, like how the voting system is, it's so weird. Like, I have like media members like message me, cause I got a vote this year. If you're a finalist, you get a vote. Media members get a vote. I have media members saying like, hey, I haven't kept up with it. Who should I vote for this year? Which is like not their fault. It's just, why is a committee like that? Like, they should have 10 to 15, maybe 20, 30, whatever it may be, like guys that actually know stuff about kicking. But yeah, like during the event, like we were in Florida for one of the banquets, Brad Banks was a keynote speaker, which is really cool. And then Kading again got to hand out the award. So it was like a Iowa Fest, which was really, really cool. But yeah, like we're there, and like me, Rodrigo, and Blake, we're just like, I don't know, like on like a stage or whatever. And the committee members would always come up and they're like, it's great having an SEC guy back in the Groza. And I'm sitting there like, oh God. Cause like, I felt pretty good like going into it. I was like, yeah, I have a good chance to win this. And then like, as the week went on, like, the committee guys were just like, only talked to Rodrigo, just did that. I'm like, oh God, no way I win this. Like,
it's
no.
Fixed, dude.
Yeah. And I was talking to Kading before, and he's like, yeah, like, don't be surprised. Like, cause it can turn into like a little bit of like a popularity contest. So yeah, I mean, that's, again, I'm not like the Groza didn't take away or help me make a kick that year. So I could,
right.
Whatever, I could care less. Yeah, I mean,
speaking of that year, last year, not 2 years ago, really, at this point,
yeah.
You know, I'm not going to suck you off for your year because I would never do that. I don't want to suck you off for anything.
He's not going to suck you off, but go ahead and put your head back and close your eyes.
Right. But like, talk about the growth in Drake. I mean, this podcast, there's like, I'm telling you, there's like 30 to 50 year old women that listen to this, and they're sitting there thinking, wow, all right, well, Kluver's sucking Keith off. This is a great image. Talk about the growth from freshman year Keith, mindset wise, comfortability wise in the program, to now you're in your fourth year and you have an all American. I mean, your face is on the fucking wall, dude. Like, talk about how weird that is and what kind of mentally or physically got you over the hump, not over the hump, cause it's not like you kicked bad, but what just clicked for that season. Because as we saw, even this year, it's hard to do it. Even if you're good, like, you know, it's wild. Everything has to happen. Like, you have to get a bunch of kicks. You have to hope that KF wants to go for it or kick the field goal instead of go for it or punt. You have to, a lot of times that's like just luck of, did the defense stop our offense right where we needed them to stop? Is the wind good? Is the temperature good? Especially up above, what is it? The Mason-Dixon line? Where's the Mason-Dixon line at?
The south.
In the north, if you're in the north, you have to have a lot of weather luck, which is another bullshit thing. I mean, Rodrigo missed two kicks in a dome in a championship game.
One of the committee guys literally said, he said to me, he goes, you know how hard it is to kick in that humidity? It's like, yeah, I actually do.
Oh, my God.
Tell him to eat dicks. Do you know how hard it is to kick when the ball's frozen?
Where there's wind and rain, like the Nebraska game, that kick was not easy. Like, it was raining.
Your Iowa State game by itself,
that was the weirdest locker room experience I've ever had in my life. Like,
you guys were in there for 3 hours, right?
Hours, like our second break, like Coach Joy was like someone like drive to Hy-Vee, go get sandwiches, and I think like we had a managers get a police escort to Hy-Vee and just bring back loads of sandwiches.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and we see like the students out there slipping, sliding or whatever on the field, and the field was torn apart. Like, one of the kicks, I literally tell Coach Woods, I'm like, we have to go tackle over because there's a mud pile. So
you had to move the spot.
Unreal. Yeah, it's crazy.
Is that you think that 19 Iowa State game is your most impressive performance? Personally, because from a you know, not knowing the specifics of it or like the exact spots where the ball were sitting, from a outsider who knows, that was my guess, that four kicks on that slush field in the water, that's got to be up there.
I think so, but I will say, like, other than the field, like, the conditions were nice. Like, it was warm, there was no wind. So that was nice, but the field was awful. I think Purdue, honestly, 2019 was a good game. The conditions, it was cold, very windy, and I go like 4 for 4 with some pretty like deep kicks. I haven't really had to like reflect back on that yet and see, you know, which game was big, but yeah, Iowa State was a lot of fun.
Anyway, talk about that whole year and the mindset is what.
The mindset. I think it comes back to like what you were saying about the off season, like what kickers do. Again, like at Iowa, we do everything the same as, you know, the wide receivers, linebackers, or whatever. I had a buddy at Minnesota. I don't think it's with this staff here with Fleck, but they were like, yeah, when they're allowed.
They went home for the summer.
Yeah. And I would hate that. Like, how do you gain any respect from your teammates? But yeah, like in that off season, the Hawkeye Championship is probably the biggest thing that we do here. Mm-hmm. In our program. It's do the right thing and compete. That's kind of what it comes down to. And it's a competition. We were just competing. I ended up getting 8th overall.
Wow.
So I think that helped me a lot. Like you say, like a mental hump or whatever. I think like that was like a mental hump.
Because now you're going into your junior year.
It's really, really hard to establish yourself.
Absolutely.
In my situation, like you start your freshman year, have a big kick, and then you're out for 2 years. And people that don't really know kicking or like, yes, I continually had better camps, you know, freshman, sophomore, junior year, but I got beat out. So people probably thought like, why?
That something was wrong. Yeah.
Something was wrong. And in reality, like, no, nothing was wrong. Miguel was kicking great. It's just kind of getting that like confidence back too, I think was huge. Hawkeye Championship helped a lot, just mentally.
I think, yeah, and for a specialist to finish up in the top 10 of that, I know the highest I ever finished was like maybe 26th or something like that, but Marshall finished like top 8, I think, once, or maybe even like top 5. Mm-hmm. And it just shows that, like, for those listening, we've talked about the Hawkeye Championship. A good all-encompassing description of that is like they take every aspect of your life and they put a point system on it. And it's basically like, how dedicated are you to being an Iowa football player in a sense? And at the end, the guys who win are the guys who sleep the best, eat the most consistent, work out the most, and see the biggest gains in the weight room, have the best grades, other random stuff, and do assignments for their position groups, like all that shit. And so to establish yourself in that competition, your peers and your teammates know, like, damn, like he earned that shit. And there's no kind of getting, you know, the numbers don't lie. This past summer hits, COVID hits. You are you came in underneath me and Ron, first Ron, and then me for a second year as like the leader of the group. Cause I feel like the leader of the special teams group is very important. It's like this passed on role. Because there is still some of this, like, you have to do it by yourself. It's a group that, right. And then it becomes Miguel, I'm sure. And, which I would have loved to have been there for that. And then eventually it's you. And COVID hits, and it's like, what? And you can talk about the fuckiness of COVID. And then the shit goes down this summer with Coach Doyle, racial disparity, all that. Talk about like coming into yourself as a leader and like what you learn from guys ahead of you or other people that you learn from as far as leadership goes. And then like what it was like to try and lead your position group, but not only that, the entire team, like you were on the leadership group that, you know, and were looked at as a respected senior going into the season. Leading the team through this summer turmoil into this season, what was all of that like?
Yeah, it's crazy. And it's so hard to describe too. Like I've talked to guys that graduated last year, and they're even like what's going on? And I tried to tell them, but I'm like, you just don't understand. Like there's no way you could understand what happened without being there. It was
crazy. Wait, so you're saying all the fans on Twitter, they don't exactly know what they're talking about?
Which is surprising, isn't it?
Yeah, that is weird.
Yeah, no, it was crazy experience. Like I was in the hotel quarantining, I got it. And I was there when they canceled the season. So one thing that, again, like we do Iowa's like really well is like we're always like around each other hanging out, and we couldn't do that with COVID. Like we couldn't really have like a specialist golf outing or anything like that because of violations or whatever the stupid stuff was. I could go on and on about the COVID stuff, but yeah, it was just crazy. We were constantly hit with a problem, but we knew that like there had to be a solution. And I think that showed with our record this year, starting out 0-2, and we knew like we had a good team. It was just being able to put it together and show it. We ended up finishing strong, but yeah, in the off season, it was crazy. We didn't have a Hawkeye championship because we couldn't, we were in quarantine the whole time. So it was hard, especially as like the young guys, that was probably the hardest thing to connect that gap. Again, at Iowa, we just do things so differently. Like we are like connected with the freshmen rather than, you know, SEC school could just be like, he's a freshman, he doesn't play, who cares about him? Like that's not how we roll. So like we weren't able to eat meals together. We weren't able to like hang out. So it was literally just me hanging out with my roommates and other guys hanging out with our roommates. And yeah, the Hawkeye championship this year was, we were split up into six teams, two captains each. It was me and Spence. And we had KB as our coach, and it was literally us just kind of, we were on Zoom the whole time, just kind of describing like how we are as a culture, what we do, how we're different to the young guys. Again, like we have a big, the saying that you guys know, like leaders create leaders. And that's kind of what it came down to in the off season. But it was so difficult. I think one of the most things that like I remember through Iowa football is like my first day there, and it shows like so much of like who we are as a culture. My first day there, like I see like CJ walking in the hallway, and like me, I'm like wow, that's CJ Beathard. Like they were a top five team last year. He's their quarterback. Like I just view him as like, wow, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And it's so funny to think that way, because now as a senior, like it's not like that. But we're walking in the hallway. He goes, he's like, hey Keith, like you're from North Carolina, right? I'm like, yeah. He goes, you want to play some ping pong? I was like, yeah, like sure. I'm like, how do you one, like know who I am, know where I'm from? And we play ping pong for like 30 minutes. And I know he probably doesn't even remember doing that. But that little thing, that's like kind of who we are as a program. We're just the connectivity is major. And it was very hard to do that this year. You know, we pride ourselves on having a developmental culture, developmental program. And again, like there were some things missing in the off season that, you know, it kind of took us a while to learn. So yeah, it was just different. We had to get used to it, but once we got used to it, we were rolling. So
with all the stuff of Coach Doyle and stuff, there was the player meeting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or not just a player meeting. It was an all like building meeting. And it was described as like one of the most, like maybe my brother was in it, and he's like, you know, he's a little bit like ditzy, I would say. I mean, you know how you know my brother, so you know what I'm talking about. I don't know how to describe him to other people, but he's only been in the program at this point for 6 months. He joined a year ago about right now. And then you guys got cut off, so he really only had 8 weeks with y'all. He goes, he texts me after that meeting, and he says that, like, I was like, what was the meeting about? He goes, dude, it was life changing. And I was
That's what I'm talking about, where I like wish that former players were in the room so they could experience like how it was. Cause you can't, like, I can't put into words how that was. Cause like, it was just like so open. Without like kind of revealing too much details, like players yelling at players, like not yelling, that's not the right word,
but calling out.
I don't even, not like calling out. It was just like how they were feeling. It wasn't like personal, like you did this to me. It was more like, this is how I feel. So I think like the coaches were saying stuff too. It was just a very open conversation, and that like, it was a big turning point in our program.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a huge difference, like Coach Doyle leaving. And I want to speak on Ray for a little bit too. Like Coach Ray is awesome. Like he's been in the program for a while, and having his like position for however long he did, like that's got to be tough. One, like he gets thrown into the worst position possible. Like one, like he's not a new strength coach, but I mean, he's, everyone looks at him and like, there's like a presence that's like missing in Doyle. And Ray has eventually, like he's got that presence now. But at the start, like he didn't, and that's not like his fault or anything like that. It's just, that's like, we're not used to that. It's just like missing, if like KF leaves, there's a new head coach comes in, there's a presence missing. But yeah, like the respect for Ray has like gone through the roof. Like again, like with COVID, he can't be with us. He can't be with the young guys. With like Coach Doyle, it's like him being gone, it's so much different. We're missing a strength coach. We're still down a strength coach right now. The financial stuff, like it's like all this, like all these things go into play. And he's again thrown in the worst position possible, and he's got to do his best. And again, like making us ready for the season. And the Iowa strength program is almost the biggest part of our team.
Mm-hmm.
So not missing that. It's just, it was different, but Ray did a phenomenal job of like getting us ready and kind of connecting us back together. And I think that kind of showed during the season. So it was a totally different experience, but it was one that I'll like never forget again. Like sometimes, you know, guys will say like, yeah, it sucks. Like the COVID year was my senior year. I'm kind of like glad that it was my senior year, cause it was so different. The players had so much more responsibility, and it was one of those things that again, like you'll never forget. So it was just totally different and so hard to describe. But it was one of those things, like now that we've got through it, it's going to be dangerous.
What was one thing that, like, you don't have to go into detail, like what was said in the meeting, but like what changed after the meeting once everybody got whatever they wanted to say off their chest?
I think the one thing that the one thing that I realized is kind of how like some guys felt. Like I didn't know that some guys felt this way, especially like being in the locker room. Like we're all close, we're all friends. I felt like if someone like really felt that, like not bad, but if they felt, you know, in a negative way, or they were being whatever, like that, I would have heard about it before like that meeting. So like, that's where I was kind of like, eye opening a little bit and wanted to, like have more conversations with dudes. But one player like in specific said like, hey, like we have to realize like the players have the power. And that wasn't in a way like, oh, the players can do whatever they want, but like, you know, there's a different, like not power structure. It's again, hard to describe, but like realizing that we as players, like we don't need to be not talked down to. I'm explaining this so poorly.
No. I want to, there's a, you talk about the change of power, and it's a tough subject because it is like, it's such a weird thing that just doesn't happen when Doyle leaves. And I'm not going to straight up put you on the spot and ask like what you thought of Doyle. We've talked off air about what we think about the situation in detail. When he leaves and there's that power, there's that power structure of like, okay, well, you know, for better or worse, whatever Doyle or other coaches or other people or whatever situations happened over the past 20 years, Doyle's gone now. And it's pretty clear like that because of people speaking up, there was a change made. Do you think that, because I'll be our podcast, if you go listen to the first 2 weeks, Drake and I had you guys dead for rights, like thought, and Kevin too, honestly, like we were like, program might be in the toilet. Like the players might be doing what they want to do. Do you think for at least some amount of time, I'm sure it's gotten better. And like, it obviously KF had a handle on it, and you guys killed it to finish the season. Do you think that for some amount of time, maybe right away during the summer, or even like, maybe still to this day, there is some sense of guys can get away with a little bit more than they used to be able to. And it's not necessarily a good thing. And maybe that affected you guys in the beginning of the season.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say it, like I love Coach Doyle. He was awesome. Again, like this is just me personally. He's done so much for me personally. And I responded so well to the stuff that he was saying and the things that he did, like personally, I loved him. So it was totally different making that change. But yeah, like you said, yeah, like getting away with things. I don't think it was like guys like, ooh, I'm going to do this because I know I can get away with it. It was more, this sounds bad, but it's like, it was more like kind of like testing the limits, I think. And it was a select few guys, but that select few guys, as you guys know, can turn into a larger group. And what that like tough conversation meeting that we had, I think, again, like we realized like, yeah, the players have the power, but with that power comes more responsibility.
It's a Spider-Man quote, baby.
Exactly. So, you know, during that time, like guys were kind of like, oh, like it's just little stuff. Like when Coach Doyle like would call it up and we're talking before a lift, like it would be dead silent. Like when Ray was doing that, it was like guys were still tying their shoes. They were like still talking in the back. Like that's like, you don't do that.
Right.
And again, like so hard for Ray to like just be put in that position to go off on people.
Not just Ray, but I, you know, and we all talk to coaches. The coaches, they were in a bad spot, right? Like a bad spot of like, hey, now after this, if I call somebody out, am I getting fired? Like, yeah. Is this going to get taken the wrong way? It's hard to coach. And so for a while, I feel like that situation is almost like it's just going to be what it is for a while because the coaches can't lay down the law until things kind of blow over and trust is rebuilt.
We definitely didn't have like our Iowa culture for a couple of weeks. And again, what it came down to, I think, and what flipped things were the players realized like if there's a problem going on, the players need to fix it. It's not the coach's job. And I think, yeah, like another like really big thing, I don't know if I should be sharing this cause COVID
can,
and stuff,
but we can edit it if we have to.
During COVID, our first two losses, again, we lost, when we huddled up before practice, like we do stretch and then we come together and like Ray or KF will say something. We all get together and we're close. During COVID, we were all like back. So we were like all like 5 yards away from each other. It was just weird. Like after our loss against Northwestern, KF's like, you know, like, no, like, fuck it. Like, bring it in. Like we're getting close to each other and we all like get close to each other. And then like the energy was back in practice and that little thing, like that was huge.
Was there any, I don't think we had one during our time, but you hear occasionally about player only meetings. And I thought that maybe we were at a point after that second loss of, I don't know if the program's in the spot to do this or anybody is, but like, did someone stand up at practice or in the middle of a meeting or Sunday or, you know, a special teams meeting in the morning or someone's like stand up and say like, hey guys, if we don't fucking turn it around, we're chop liver this year. Like everyone's got their eyes on us. They know this type of summer we had, they're going to be hunting us if we don't fucking bring this together and figure it out. Was there any kind of talk like that? Was it more position based? Like, hey, everybody get your guys together and rally the troops because we're in a bad spot, 0-2.
Yeah. I mean, and again, it wasn't a lot of people. We knew that we had a good team. It was just, again, we weren't doing the little things the Iowa way. So there wasn't one guy, like we didn't have like a Josie that stood up and just kind of went off on people. It was more of like the leadership group getting together and it's like, hey, like we don't have the right energy at practice. We're, you know, I don't know, jumping off sides more, whatever it may be. Just like, again, the little things that we always do right, we weren't doing. And it was interesting, again, like that Michigan State week, where we got our win, we smoked them. And I think that got our confidence back a little bit, where it's like we're actually a good team. Like we just smoked this Big Ten team. Like the Big Ten's tough, as we all know. That helped out a lot, but there was no like one guy that stood up and it's like, hey, like let's turn it around, like a hoorah speech. It was more of like, there was a weird like feeling around the building. Like if this doesn't go right this week, then we can be in some serious trouble. And I think everyone had, a different type of energy. I think energy was a really big word in the off season in our first 2 weeks. Like we were lacking that energy, not only during practice, but in the games. And we brought that energy to practice on, again, Michigan State Week, because I think, yeah, what I mentioned with KF and the huddle was huge. I think not having fans, like, really impacted us. And, again, like, everyone didn't have fans, but, I think we feed off that energy a little bit more because we're used to having a, you know, full pack stadium. Iowa fans are great. So it was again, just so different. I think we just didn't have our identity until the second or third week of the year.
Yeah. Kevin, Drake, you guys got any questions for him before we wrap this up?
Oh, we've answered some, or this kid's answered so many questions. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Any favorite, other than the Michigan, I guess you don't remember that night. Any other like favorite stories or memories from your time? Could have been like, you know, in the specialist room. You and Nick and like your roommates were always really close. I saw you guys on social media, like always golfing or doing something.
TJ, I think he brings some good stories, and it's not even like he did anything. He's just like the best way to describe him. He's like Shaggy off Scooby-Doo. Like he's just dopey.
George sent me a hilarious picture of Tej from Cabo, but
oh my gosh,
those guys seem to be having a good time out there.
Yeah, no, TJ is a great dude. Again, like, yeah, he works his butt off. He's another like really good story. Just like coming home, like he was either awake or asleep, and what I mean by that, it's like he was either like really into things or he was like actually just asleep. Like yeah. I would come home, and he'd be like sitting on the couch, just like with his backpack on and like full on like pinstripe bowl jacket with his shoes on, just sleeping on the couch. I'm like, what are you doing? Like there was one time he was sleeping downstairs and we'd go downstairs and we'd throw just bananas at him until he woke up, like hit his mouth and he'd be like this and just wipe it off. Like he's just a dopey dude.
Pro bowler.
All this sounds like stupid, but just like having that little like camaraderie with your friends is awesome. Like I already miss it. So just that little stuff, like being able to come home and just joke with dudes or whatever.
Microphone, yeah. Kevin. Are you going to be in the NFL? Does the NFL, is there somebody in the league that's going to take a chance on 5'9", 5'10"? It says you're 5'10 on the website.
Let's take five.
What?
I'll say let's take the 5'10.
We'll take the 5'10. Is anybody going to take a chance on Keith Duncan? I always said that if you're going to have a chance in the league, you're going to have to prove that you can kick off, right? And so what does that look like moving forward as you try and just catch an opportunity here?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in California right now training. That's what I'm doing. Basically, I'm building leg strength. I told you I was up to 186. Flexibility is huge.
Old big dick Keith, huh?
I got a hot house yoga membership, which I'm not too like proud of, but it's helped out a lot.
What's wrong with yoga?
You know, I don't know.
It's more of the hot house yoga part of it. It's the fact that you're going to hot yoga with these moms just trying to pick them up, you know, which today don't hate the player, hate the game. I respect you for it.
He
probably could have hooked up with any mom in Iowa City after that Michigan game.
Not my mom.
Yeah,
that's what you think.
Again, training. I love the competition, so that's kind of what I'm just always looking forward to. It's about making the most of your opportunity, and that was taught by Coach Ferentz. That's basically what it comes down to, is making the most of your opportunity. Again, with COVID, we don't have many opportunities. So I'm just trying to see what I can do, get my name out there and getting a shot.
Better hope whatever snapper you got for pro day is on his game.
Yeah, right. Hopefully he's ready to go.
I hope so.
Can you snap it for him?
Say what?
That's a surprise. Yeah, so we'll see.
If we're going to put the weight back on, he's like, hey, I'm snapping here. I'm still good at it.
Allegedly. There's stories, there's rumors in the mill. So, that's about all I got. I mean, we went almost an hour and 40 minutes. We could talk about shit forever.
You two nerded the fuck out. And me and Kevin were sitting here like, when do we talk about football?
Dude, most of that was about football. It wasn't that much about. We could talk all about.
There was
like
a lot of the intricacies about kicking, and none of us understand shit.
Do you have a football question?
I don't. I you. We didn't. Me and Keith didn't play football, dude. Yeah. We were just on the team. Like we had our own game. We're just sure. playing like target shooting, basically. That's what special teams is you're just playing target. It's target practice. It's not even
pretty true. We're relief.
Yeah, that's what it is. Anything you want to say to Hawkeye Nation? Cause I'm sure we'll get a lot of response from this. People will tag you, before we go here, Keith.
Yeah, no. Well, one, I appreciate the Iowa fans are awesome. I didn't realize how passionate they were about the Hawkeyes until I came here. There's no pro team. So yeah, again, I love the rivalries and I love how passionate the fans are. If I miss a kick, cuss me out. I'm totally fine with it. I understand and I probably deserve it. So I just honestly just appreciate the support from everyone. It was a lot of fun. Just what I love is walking places and people come up to me and talk to me. Again, I'm a small dude, so I'm not intimidating at all. So please come up and talk to me. I love having those conversations. Yeah, it's just, it was a lot of fun. And that's about it, I guess. It's
hope to represent the Hawks in the league.
Hopefully.
That'd be cool. Episode 183 with the man, Keith Duncan. It's been a long time coming, this has.
Yeah, you guys got my dad on before me, so it's kind of embarrassing.
Yeah, oh yeah, we had
that was a good one too.
Well, we had Stu on. Oh baby. Yeah. Hip, hip, legend. Right. Legend. Did yeah. it on the porch, on the patio by the pool.
He was just trying to flex our backyard because he built the whole backyard. So that's
super proud of
that. What a legend. Yeah. All right, we'll let you go. Hopefully your prep goes well, and we'll have you back on at some point. Hopefully you have your name on the back of a jersey for a team. So that's it.
Thank you guys so much.
Absolutely. Keith Duncan, everybody. We'll talk at you again soon. Peace.
I'm MJ Acosta-Ruiz.
And I'm Lindsay Zarniak.
And together we'll be hosting the On Her Turf podcast. This summer, On Her Turf is hosting a daily Olympics podcast
that focuses exclusively on women's sports and the amazing women competing in Tokyo.
We'll bring you interviews with Olympians and in-depth analysis on your favorite teams.
Plus, we're going to talk about some of the challenges still facing women's sports today.
So join us daily at On Her Turf as we cover all the excitement of the Tokyo Olympics.
Be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts and be sure to follow On Her Turf on Twitter and Instagram too.